We're going to be very different. We're going to negotiate in a different way than has been done before.
Cautious optimism surrounds positive North Korean developments. It's Monday, April 30th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a record number of bombs fall in Afghanistan. A U.S. diplomacy slowdown with Australia. Tibetans safeguard culture in India. Nano eye drops, coffee for refugees. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says during an expected nuclear summit in the next 4 to 6 weeks with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, President Donald Trump will insist on deeds and actions by Pyongyang, not words and promises.
This administration has its eyes wide open. We know the history. We know the risks. We're going to be very different. We're going to negotiate in a different way than has been done before. We're going to require those steps. We use the word irreversible with great intention. We're going to require those steps that demonstrate that denuclearization is going to be achieved. We're not going to take promises. We're not going to take words. We're going to look for actions and deeds. And until such time, the president has made incredibly clear, we will keep the pressure campaign in place until we achieve that. That's different. And so in each case, both countries will have to do more than words. We'll have to actually deliver an outcome that is the one that Kim Jong-un and I had the chance to talk about at the direction of the president.
Helping to set the stage for the Trump-Kim summit was another historic summit, this one between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in, which ended with a joint commitment toward denuclearization and peace in the Korean Peninsula. VOA's Juseseman Oni reports.
Following a rapid thaw in relations, the leaders of North and South Korea hailed what they call a new era of peace. In Washington, U.S. President Donald Trump praised the North Korean leader's latest diplomatic overture.
I don't think he's playing. And you know, it's never gone like this. It's never gone this far.
On Friday, Kim became the first North Korean leader to step across the border into South Korea. During the historic summit with President Moon Jae-in, the two leaders agreed to work towards removing all nuclear weapons from the Korean Peninsula. But neither side provided details or specific commitments. Words are not enough, warns East Asia expert Dennis Wilder.
So far, all we have are promises. We don't have any real concrete steps that the North has taken that we can see, other than the fact that he has postponed any missile or nuclear tests for several months.
North Korea's nuclear weapons have been a major sticking point in relations with the United States. Washington employed a campaign of maximum pressure, which includes hefty sanctions and frequent threats of military force, to persuade the North to abandon its nuclear program. Now, weeks ahead of a possible face-to-face meeting with Kim, President Trump says he feels a personal responsibility to make the world safer.
It's certainly something that I hope I can do for the world. This is beyond the United States. This is a world problem, and it's something that I hope I'm able to do for the world.
North Korea has made similar commitments in the past, and yet, despite the absence of results, retired four-star general Jack Keane says it's worth a try.
For the sake of the peninsula, for the sake of the region, and for the sake of the world, it's worth doing. So we'll see. No one knows for sure, but the opportunity that we have, We've never had this opportunity before.
Trump insists the maximum pressure campaign will continue until the North agrees to halt its nuclear weapons program. Jason Samalny, VOA News, Washington.
Despite recent tensions over North Korea's nuclear and missile tests, life is actually quite normal for American military families who are living at Camp Humphreys in South Korea. That's the largest overseas U.S. Army installation in the world. VOA's Brian Patton reports from Camp Humphreys that the increased threat of military conflict with North Korea has not altered the family-friendly environment on this growing base, located just 100 kilometers from the heavily fortified inter-Korean border.
Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Puskus tries to come to most of his daughter's high school soccer games at Camp Humphreys. In fact, his family's lifestyle at this sprawling American military base is similar to one they would lead back home.
We go to church on Sundays. We see, you know, all our friends there. You know, we're on the soccer field most in the afternoons or just going for a bike ride. I mean, the same thing we do if we were back in the States.
Camp Humphreys is the size of a small city and is continuing to grow to accommodate over 40,000 people as the U.S. military in Korea moves to close older bases in congested Seoul and other regions of the country. There are modern apartments for soldiers and their families, schools, American shopping centers, and fast food restaurants to help bring some of the comforts of home to military life in Korea.
I've been around the Army for part of the last 40 years as a soldier and now as a civilian, and this is as normal as any Army post I've been on. In fact, it's probably the nicest one I've been on because everything's new.
The annual U.S.-South Korean military exercises underway are just part of the routine of military life here. Like many U.S. soldiers in Korea, Lieutenant Colonel Puskas tries not to overreact to reports that war is imminent over the North's nuclear and missile tests, or that peace is at hand with the upcoming nuclear summits.
I mean, obviously, we're sensitive to what is going on. Do we worry about it? I mean, we think about it.
Instead, Puskas, like many in Camp Humphreys, works to balance family responsibilities with maintaining military readiness. Brian Patton, VOA News, Camp Humphreys.
As developments in North Korea continue to develop rapidly, we invite you to read more on our top story each day by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. North Korea to invite U.S. and South Korean experts and journalists to view nuclear shutdown. Modi Xi talks highlight India-China rivalry cooperation. Rebels say military clashes in Myanmar force thousands to flee. A UN team vows to work to end Rohingya crisis. Pakistan moves doctor who helped U.S. find bin Laden. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The U.S.-led coalition in Afghanistan is dropping bombs at a record pace, nearly 17 years into a war that even U.S. military leaders concede is a stalemate. But as VOA's Bill Gallo reports, it's not clear the bombs are helping to end the deadlock.
A deadly start to 2018 in Afghanistan. During the first 3 months of the year, coalition planes dropped more bombs than in that same period in any of the past 15 years. It's the latest evidence the war is significantly intensifying since President Donald Trump announced a new military strategy in August. But for nearly 17 years, bombs have been unable to end the conflict. And more bombs now are unlikely to help, says Thomas Johnson, author of Taliban Narratives.
So I think that it's an act of desperation by the U.S. You know, they cannot kill enough Taliban through the air to be able to have any significant impact on the war.
2018 is likely to get even more violent as fighting picks up during the warmer months. On Sunday, nearly 60 people were killed when the Islamic State attacked an election registration center in Kabul. The violence comes as Afghan President Ashraf Ghani calls on the Taliban to join the political arena and participate in the upcoming election. That effort has been praised by analysts such as Johnson, who say there is no military solution to the war.
I don't care if you double the amount of air sorties that you're flying right now. We will never win this war militarily. The only solution to this war is political.
But U.S. military officials say the bombing campaign is part of a larger strategy that leads to a negotiated settlement, no matter how long that may take. According to the latest U.S. military estimate, the Afghan government controls just over half the country's districts, with insurgents controlling or contesting the rest. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Washington.
Pollution of the ocean is a global issue, and many countries are taking measures to prevent it. But in the case of Pakistan, no strategy has been developed to deal with pollution, which is having a negative impact on life up and down the country's coast. Shayan Saleem from VOA's Urdu service visited the port city of Karachi, Pakistan's most populous city, as Manajer narrates.
6,000 industrial complexes in Karachi have dumped toxic waste into the ocean, according to a committee of Pakistan's Senate. Leaking oil from ships, tons of plastic materials, polluted waters from the rivers, and sewage are also fouling the waters. And people notice.
We came to Karachi from Multan and saw so much pollution. When we waded through the water, we felt something is biting our skin. The water has become so toxic.
Karachi dumps tens of thousands of metric tons of garbage into the sea every day.
37,000 metric tons of garbage of the city is being dumped into the sea, making it polluted. Once seawater in Karachi was described as blue water. Children used to play games at that time. They would throw coins into the sea and then dive down and retrieve them. Now, due to pollution, the blue water has turned into black water.
It is estimated that close to 4 million people are employed directly or indirectly by Pakistan's fishing industry. Ocean pollution has hit them hard.
We take the nets. We get more of the waste than fish. We will feed the children only when we catch them. We have no livelihood now.
We used to fish and enjoy eating our catch. Now we do not have the same enjoyment. Fish that we net look fragile, and dead fish is coming too.
Cleaning up Pakistan's coastal waters and its 1,050 kilometers of beaches will take public action.
Every citizen is saying that pollution is increasing. Why don't we do something ourselves? When we visit the beaches, we should collect our own trash and bring it back and put it in the trash cans. The way we keep our homes, streets, and neighborhood clean, if we keep our ocean clean, then the pollution will be reduced to some extent.
Experts say that permission for setting up an industrial plant is conditional upon building a treatment facility as well. But they note that the law is rarely enforced. For Shayan Salim in Karachi, Aman Azhar, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, a UN Security Council team visiting Bangladesh promised to work hard to resolve a crisis involving hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims who have fled to the country to escape military-led violence in Myanmar. The diplomats said their visit was an opportunity to see the situation firsthand. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on this Monday morning on VOA Asia. The Trump administration has abandoned plans to appoint a new ambassador to Australia, 18 months after the last U.S. envoy finished his assignment. Many in Australia see the move as a snub, although the government in Canberra says it's not offended. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The last permanent U.S. ambassador to Canberra was John Berry, who left the post in 2016. The position is seen as a desirable appointment, given Canberra's leafy surrounds and the relative calm of Australian politics. But the posting has been vacant for 18 months. The Trump administration had planned to nominate Admiral Harry Harris from the US Pacific Command as the next United States ambassador to Australia. That decision has been reversed, and Admiral Harris, a high-ranking Japanese-American naval officer, will instead become Washington's envoy in South Korea. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said he was disappointed his good friend wouldn't be taking up a senior diplomatic role in Canberra, but that he understood the decision given the Admiral's expertise and experience. But there is disquiet in other quarters. Former Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd says President Trump is in danger of taking Australia, a long-standing ally, for granted.
I think the bottom line is the administration's decided that South Korea demonstrably is strategically more important, given what's happening with the inter-Korean summit. You can understand that reasoning. But for Australia, I think it does indicate, at least from the view of the Trump administration, we are seen as something as a second-rate ally. President Trump is not a popular figure within Australia for a whole range of reasons on the right and the left of politics. But the bottom line is all Australians expect any administration in the United States to take our alliance seriously.
Australia signed a formal security treaty with the United States in the early 1950s. The agreement has underpinned Australia's national security ever since. While it has close trading ties with China and a historic relationship with its former colonial masters in Britain, Australia considers its alliance with the United States to be its most important. Every year since 2012, US Marines have been routinely stationed in Australia's Northern Territory. The next contingent, almost 2,000 strong, is due to arrive in Darwin next month. Announced in 2011, the so-called Force Posture Agreement between Canberra and Washington is designed to enhance military cooperation. The English-speaking nations have fought on the same side in various conflicts for a century, including Vietnam and Iraq. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, preserving Tibetan culture. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia, Kim Jong-un says he plans to readjust North Korea's current time zone to match the South's. In 2015, the North created its own Pyongyang time as an effort to remove a legacy of Japanese colonial rule. Switching back will help facilitate communication with South Korea and also the United States. Every day is a great time to visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Tibetan exiles marking the 60th year of the Dalai Lama's arrival in India after fleeing his homeland, saying they have successfully safeguarded Tibetan culture and preserved Tibetan identity, which Tibetan leaders warn is threatened by Chinese rule in their homeland. Some 70 schools run by the Tibetan Exile Administration in India, which is home to the largest Tibetan refugee community in the world, are at the heart of those efforts. Anjana Pasricha recently visited a Tibetan school in the Indian capital.
These songs and nursery rhymes being chanted by children in a school in New Delhi are all in Tibetan. And they are being taught by teachers dressed in the traditional Tibetan dress, the chuba. Migmar Sering, principal at the TCV Day School, smiling, says this helps the more than 100 students learn about the homeland they have never seen.
They advise the Tibetan situation not related with political, just we have a big, we have a beautiful country, example, we have a beautiful country, we have a good language, we have a good identity, we have a good religion.
At schools like this run by the Tibetan Exile Administration in India, children learn the Tibetan script and read storybooks translated into the language. Young girls play traditional musical instruments. Teacher Sonam Chedan says until grade 3, all subjects are taught in their native language.
You know, in Tibet, now Tibetan language, you know, the Chinese, they are suppressing all the, you know, not to, even in the class, they are not allowed to talk in Tibetan, only the Chinese language. So to preserve our language here in exile, we, especially in the school, we try to, you know, everything we try to convert in Tibetan only.
Some fear these efforts to safeguard their culture could face a challenge as younger Tibetans look for opportunities outside India. Others say the traditions they assimilated growing up in Tibetan settlements and schools remain strongly with them even overseas, like Tenzin Dikong, who migrated to Australia in 2014.
Through the elders' stories and through our teachers, we can, when we learn Tibetan subject, we learn a lot of histories and all the stuff. So I do really feel very connected with Tibetan cultures and how Tibet looks like. And I do have some imagination how Tibet looks like surrounded by all monastery, all the monastery.
Nurturing their roots keeps alive the dream of someday carrying back their traditions to their homeland.
We have a truth. One day we go back to Tibet. I just believe that.
A third generation of Tibetan refugees is now growing up in India, home to the largest Tibetan exile community in the world. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
This news from VOA Asia. The leaders of China and India stress the importance of close ties in talks against the background of their rivalry for leadership in Asia and the potential for cooperation on economic and security matters. Chinese President Xi Jinping hosted Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi in the central Chinese city of Wuhan. Visit VOA Asia Facebook. That's your host for daily stories and features. This is VOA Asia. A cup of coffee is a good way for many of us to start the day, but it can also do far greater good. Manyang Kerr, a former Sudanese child refugee, is one of the so-called lost boys. He's now a U.S. citizen and is passionate about helping refugees build a brighter future. He does it with coffee. VOA's Jun So talked with the founder of a social enterprise. It's called 734 Coffee. VOA's Carol Pearson narrates her report.
In this warehouse outside Washington, D.C., Manyang Kerr operates 734 Coffee. He launched the specialty coffee business last year to raise funds for refugees.
734 is the geographical coordination of refugee camp in Ethiopia, where 250,000 refugees live. I know the struggle those refugees face every day.
The camp in Ethiopia's Gambela region was Kerr's home for 13 years. At age 3, he became one of the lost boys, the name given to an estimated 20,000 children who were displaced and orphaned by the civil war in Sudan.
When I was 3 years old, my village was attacked, and then it was burned down by the northern part of the government. So we, the children, when our village was burned, and we separate from our parents, we run and run to Ethiopia, and then we become refugees. Too many children are dying along the way.
It was a 1,600-kilometer journey. And being a refugee, living in a camp, Kerr recalls was terrifying.
You fear every day because you think you're going to die too. You see kids die from hunger because they don't have food. You see kids dying of cholera. You see kids dying disease. You see kids just running away from refugee camp. They just wanted to go to place to be home, and they die there.
At age 16, Kerr had an opportunity to come to the U.S. as an unaccompanied minor refugee. But he never forgot the people struggling to survive in the camps he left behind. He sells the coffee online, at events, and to coffee shops.
The customers love it. Whenever they find out about the project, about the mission, they connect right with it. The coffee tastes delicious, and so it's a win-win on both sides. You get to enjoy coffee at the same time, be part of a bigger project.
A cup of 734 coffee can buy, this cup can buy one fishing net, also can buy pens, can help with our scholarship system to send kids to school. So everything in 734 means you're helping refugees help themselves.
For producer Jun So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And it's quite an interesting visual experience. If you would like to see more on this story, 734 Coffee, just head over to our website at voanews.com. We have this as a video for you to watch, along with many of the other stories that you've heard on our program, not only today, but each and every day. So check out the video version if you're able to, via mobile phone or on your computer at voanews.com. We'd like to thank everybody who was listening on the radio. Several radio stations in the Asia region carry our program each and every day, like Voice of Chungrung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chungrung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. Also Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Thanks to everyone there who is listening today and wherever you may have been listening to our program. We'd love to have you with us. Check us out as well on Facebook at VOA Asia and, of course, voanews.com. We also stream our programs there. You can download them as well if you happen to miss part of the program. Download the whole thing and listen to it later. You can also find us on iTunes and SoundCloud as well. Lots of great choices for you. We love to give you choices. Our choice for director is Tracy Carter. Engineer Zeynep Abdel-Rahman. Managing editor Diane Gao. Skylar Ogden, David Bird, and Ira Melman on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.